You're listening to AM 970, The Answer. And now, Reaching Out with Gregory Floyd, the president of Teamsters Local 237.
Welcome to another edition of Reaching Out. I'm Gregory Floyd, president, Local 237. With me, we have Mr. Greg Smith of the Daily News. He is the investigative reporter who's been doing all of our reporting on NYCHA over the last, I would say, 7 years.
Six years.
Seems
long
like
time, longest, long time.
Off the top of my head, I would say it was 6 years. And you started this investigation under the Bloomberg administration with Mr. John Rea.
Correct.
Do you remember your first report about the backlog of work tickets?
There's so many. There's so much malfeasance that's gone on over there for so long. But the first thing that we really focused on was the security cameras where they were sitting on $42 million that they'd been sitting on, some of which was sitting around for 8 years, and they weren't putting in the cameras in these developments. And there was a significant increase in crime going on at the time, which made no sense to us, and so we went after them. And that was the beginning of this thing. And that was probably, I don't know, the summer of 2012.
And shortly after that, I believe you came up with almost $1 billion that was in surplus that NYCHA had that they weren't spending?
They were taking a really long time to do anything. To this day, I'm not even sure why, because now they do it much quicker. But at the time, they were taking like 5 years to spend anything. So the money just would back up, and they would have all this money sitting there, and the development of whatever specific roof repair or fixing the brickwork would be languishing, and the people who live in these buildings would have to deal with, as you know, conditions that are just squalid and outrageous for years at a time. And this went on for, you know, a very long time. And this had been kind of happening behind the scenes, and no one had paid any attention. And that's because the biggest problem, I believe, with the Housing Authority is that it has had very little oversight. And it doesn't have, unlike any city agency, the city agencies are subject to oversight by the comptroller, but not the Housing Authority. The Housing Authority only has HUD as its oversight. And as we can see from the new report that just came out on Monday, they have been lying to HUD consistently year after year.
Now, I know the comptroller, the city comptroller, Scott Stringer, has done a few audits, maybe 10 or so, on NYCHA. So I think he has jurisdiction there.
He does have jurisdiction, but he's trying to oversee the entire city. So
right. It's
basically, he's like, every once in a while, he'll do a NYCHA report. But he doesn't, you don't have the same transparency. You can't, for example, I don't know who the contractors are. They hire contractors. Well, if you're the Department of Homeless Services, you can just go onto the website and see all of the contractors that do work for the Department of Homeless Services. You cannot see that for the Housing Authority. They don't have a connection to the comptroller's database, so it's not transparent. It's very opaque. But in terms of HUD, though, HUD has access to this information. But the Housing Authority was very sophisticated about lying to them. They got very good at it, actually.
Wow, that's amazing. Now tell us, when you say lying to them about how did they lie to them about the contractors?
All right, there are multiple lies. The biggest issue with the Housing Authority is that they rely very much on the federal government for funding, as you know.
Yeah.
So just about 90% of their capital projects, those are the big ticket items where they're, you know, fixing an entire development. That's coming from HUD, the U.S. Housing and Urban Development Department. And something like 67 to 70% of their money for their operation, the day-to-day operation stuff, comes from HUD. In other words, HUD is the piggy bank. And you cannot tell the piggy bank that the conditions in your apartments are not habitable, because if they learn that, they'll cut off your funding. So they had to lie about the conditions of the apartment in order to keep the money flowing. And they did that in a million ways. But the biggest way that they would do it is they would certify every year in a public housing. It's an annual plan, they call it. They would certify in writing, which is a sworn statement, that they were in compliance with all the laws and regulations they're required to follow to keep apartments healthy and safe. And the problem was that that was the lie, that they were not in compliance, but they would again and again claim and certify falsely that they were in compliance. The biggest issue on that one was lead paint. That's the one that's gotten the most attention.
It seems that the Housing Authority, if they admitted what was wrong and asked for help, they would be punished by the funding being taken away. So there was really no incentive to even try to fix the place and just get money to fix the place.
I'm not so sure if that's the way it works. I mean, okay. HUD basically was doing a lousy job of tracking this stuff. They were easily fooled. They would get the certified documents and say, oh, okay, everything's fine. They say it's fine, then it's fine. But they wouldn't double check it. I mean, like any organization, there's an incentive to make everything look good, right? I mean, you don't want to have people saying, well, you know, you're giving us all this money, but we're not really spending it fast enough, or we're unable to keep up with the deteriorating conditions in all of our buildings, and therefore people are living in hellish conditions. If you admit that, then it becomes a problem. However, if they're lying about it, there's a distinction for me anyway between just, you know, not saying anything and then deliberately lying. And the report by the U.S. attorney made it clear that they had a pretty sophisticated system for doing that. For example, if the HUD always sends inspectors out to all of the developments every single year, where they go into the actual development and say, you know, what's going on here? So there's a building. It has water leaks. Why? Because the pipes are old. They haven't fixed them. They know they're there, but they just haven't gotten around to it. So the people who are living in these buildings have to deal with this. So they know that the HUD inspector is going to come on a such and such a day. Before that, the instruction goes out, turn off the water. So now if the HUD inspector walks into the building, they won't see the leaks because the water's been turned off. And they did a lot of different things that were similar to that, that were deliberate and designed to obfuscate the fact that they were not following the rules they were supposed to follow and making people's lives better. They, unfortunately, the result of this, this all goes back to the tenants. They all have to live in these terrible situations in a lot of cases, and they didn't do anything about it. And then when they knew that they might get caught, they were pretty good at hiding it.
Amazing, amazing. Now, you mentioned lead, the lead paint, which has gotten the biggest story. I believe there was a case filed as early as 2010 on lead paint.
Yep.
And just recently, within the last, I'd say, 3 or 4 months, there was a multi-million-dollar settlement. $5 million. $5 million settlement.
And it's going to be reduced, but I mean, it was a jury verdict. That's correct.
So what's amazing about that, it's 2010. Mayor de Blasio's administration starts in 2014. So 4 years, there's already been a documented case and a lawsuit filed for lead poisoning. And it was a child that was poisoned, at least one. We know there's more.
Oh, there's lots more.
And the mayor, after it comes out that Shola Olatea lied and signed affidavit saying that lead was removed, said that thank God no child was harmed. One, she would sign that report knowing that in 2010, there were at least one child, and there were more, that were poisoned with lead. That's one. Two, the mayor would make that statement, and there was an active lawsuit that was already filed.
That's correct.
I find that unbelievable. He was complicit in this whole action.
All right, there's one other example of this. And again, I don't know because I wasn't there, and I have a tendency not to believe anybody anymore. But back in the spring of 2016, the mayor was confronted by the fact that the federal prosecutors had just tried to subpoena a bunch of documents from the Housing Authority related to lead paint. And at a press conference the day of that, he said, "We have a rigorous program for abating lead paint. And everything is fine. There's nothing wrong here." A month later, Shola told, I'm not sure if it's him personally, but the office of the mayor, someone in the mayor's office, that that was not true, that they were not in compliance on lead paint inspections. Did the mayor have another press conference and amend his previous statement? No. Instead, he and the Housing Authority sat on this information. The first time it was revealed that this was not the case was more than a year later in July 2017 when they amended a statement that they had put out about HUD. They did this at a meeting at where, I don't know if you've been to these board meetings, but nobody goes to them.
Yeah, it's
and
a
they
small
did it.
Room.
Nobody knew that they even did this. Yeah. I happened to find out about it and I wrote about it. And what they were admitting for the first time was that they were not in compliance. So the mayor, or certainly the office of the mayor, knew about this noncompliance for more than a year. And after telling the public and the tenants that everything was fine, they sat on that information and didn't tell anybody about it. And then ultimately it all came out in November, last November, when the Department of Investigation first revealed that she was falsely certifying that they were in compliance when she knew they were not.
That's just inexplicable. It's amazing.
It's called cover-up.
Yeah. Now, we had something that was in almost every publication that the administration could go to, saying that the reason why NYCHA is in the shape they are in now is because of union contracts, that they can't get the employees to work on the weekends without overtime because of contracts. And I've argued with them rigorously that you don't have the staff. So whether somebody comes in on the weekend or cleans a hallway at 6 a.m. or 8 p.m., it's the same person cleaning. You get one cleaning. That's a time mechanism. That's not a quality and quantity mechanism. So they sold this idea to the residents that this was going to be the cure. They sold it as sure as putting cardboard in front of a molded wall is still molded.
That's the flex ops.
The flex ops.
Flex ops.
Yes.
Flex ops. I've asked them for some information to show me how quantitatively this has affected the developments where it's being done. And it's not being done everywhere. I believe it's being done at 18 developments? Or
Maybe 12 to 18.
Okay, yeah. But specific ones in a pilot program. And I have really not seen anything that explains the actual benefit of this. I understand what they're talking about. It is a problem. I mean, I think you would agree that something happens on Saturday. The most famous case is that crazy light bulb thing in the pink houses.
Yes.
Where the cop, by mistake, shot that poor guy who happened to go into a stairwell where the bulb hadn't been replaced because it was a weekend. So, I mean, it's a reasonable idea. But it's also, it's weird because that doesn't really address the really bigger problem issues, which is you don't need to have people on the weekends and at night and all that if you can fix the building. Because if you can get the roof to be repaired, now you don't have the water going down the walls. Now you don't have people who are having the plaster in their ceiling collapse on them in the shower. If you can address the underlying issues of this thing, this will turn around. But until you do that, this is going to be always it's a game of catch up. You're constantly trying to run after things that have already happened. You need to be proactive, not reactive. And this right now is purely reactive.
I'm Gregory Floyd, President Local 237 Teamsters. And with me is our special guest, Mr. Greg Smith, investigative reporter, Daily News. We're talking about the New York City Housing Authority. Now, you mentioned something about that light. The suggestion that we made to housing was replace all your lights on your stairwell with tamper-proof lights. Because even if somebody changed the bulb,
they break
the lights out because they're doing mischief there. So somebody could come along, even on a Saturday, put the light up. As soon as they leave, the light's down again.
It's true.
So those things weren't addressed.
Yeah, they're also kind of technologically behind because there's easier ways to do all of this stuff. And the most important one, you mentioned before the work tickets phenomenon.
Yes.
That is the kind of thing that you can fix if you, there's plenty of computer software that you can use to accurately track this. They say that they now have this for the first time, really, after they had lied repeatedly. That's another issue. Yes. That was lied about. And reduce the number of tickets when they really had only just closed the tickets. They would just say, oh, yeah, we repaired that. They wouldn't actually go and repair it, but they would say that they did. Or they would just say the tenant wasn't home. That's a big thing that they would do all the time.
Wasn't home.
So they would close tickets, bring the numbers down. They claim that they're no longer doing that and that they can now accurately track what's going on there. That's the kind of thing that is very helpful. And that includes the tamper-proof lights is a thoughtful idea. It's a simple idea, right?
Right.
But that's not how it's going. It's basically we're trying to deal with the system we already have. We don't want to fundamentally change that system, and that's what needs to I think that's what needs to happen.
Well, the other thing the Housing Authority, the other function the Housing Authority doesn't do or didn't do was call the tenants in advance to make sure that they would be home. And if they're not home, just schedule somebody else. And this way, the maintenance workers aren't knocking on doors, finding no one home, walking around for another hour or so, having nothing to do because they weren't assigned work. I say it's a simple function. My doctor calls me, Mr. Florida, are you coming in for your appointment? No? Okay, we're getting somebody else. They're moving on.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a very simple function of just doing that because when the work orders were a year out in advance, nobody's going to remember that.
That's true.
So, I mean...
In effect, they created that situation.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then I read something today in the papers, today being Thursday, the 14th of June, that there was a study commissioned by the Housing Authority on safety in 2012 that we're just finding out about because the person was asked not to reveal the study. And they had all kinds of security recommendations, including what happened at Boulevard Houses when the child was stabbed. And it's amazing that the person would just come out now, this is 6 years later, on a Be My Guest in the paper and say a study was commissioned. But for 6 years, this person remained silent, including when the union had to go out and commission their own study on safety.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably the culture of cover-up that they're talking about, the idea that... the most important thing is to not let people know what's really going on. That's the way that's the mentality that they've had at that place for a really long time. I am hoping that this consent decree that they have just signed is going to turn things around. I don't think it's going to happen, you know, next week, but it will, I think, put them in a position where they now have to answer to someone who, by the way, the monitor that they're talking about is going to have fairly broad-reaching authority. That
yes.
person, whoever it is,
yes.
that person will be is not a political appointment. This person's going to be appointed by a judge, a federal judge who, by the way, already has experience with NYCHA and is not happy,
right.
is going to put this person in. And that person is going to be able to really actually take a look at what they're doing and say, no, you can't do that. And the consent decree also requires the Housing Authority to come up with a very, very specific plan with a timeline. Imagine that. Mm-hmm. What's that?
Yeah.
And to come back at them and say, okay, you're not following the timeline. You're subject to penalties. So it's the kind of thing that it theoretically could really turn this thing around. I'm a skeptic. I'm not sure that it will actually happen, which is why I will continue to do what I do. But I think it has the potential to make this right.
Yeah, and I also made a statement. I said the federal government came in. They got, $2.2 billion over 10 years from the city without making a commitment themselves to what
correct.
They were going to do. I mean, they've been, I'm the good guy. I'm coming in pointing out all these problems, but these problems require money. And the federal government needs to pony up also.
That's right. And as it happens, this is a strange dynamic, but the fear was that the HUD under Trump would just blow up the Housing Authority. And it's that they would, I think they would like to do that. However, Congress didn't let them do that. And so this budget this year, the HUD budget, for the first time in maybe, I don't know, maybe even 20 years, the amount of money from HUD to NYCHA has actually gone up this year But that's just this year. So we don't know what's going to happen going forward.
Now, this other plan that they have, the Rental Assistance Development, RAD, which is a whole different animal that they are bringing in private developers. And the way the formula would turn out, if they make a dollar more than what they're supposed to make, I believe these apartments can turn over to be market rate, and the persons in there could be charged.
I'm not so sure that that's true. I think that there's an affordable housing component that's baked into the thing, that they're required to keep them affordable for X number of years. It's a 99-year, typically. Yeah. They're like 99-year leases, and it is true though that the private developer becomes essentially the landlord, and they're the ones who deal with, you don't call NYCHA anymore. Now you're dealing with whatever
developer.
It is, L&M Development or BFC or any of those groups, and I'm not sure that is the case.
I think it's something with Section 8. It's something that if you make $40,000.
Oh, income.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah. And you make a dollar more than that, your rent could go from, say, if you're paying $1,500 to $3,000.
But it can never go above 30% of your income. That's the one thing I do know. That is a fact. Right. But it's also interesting because what's the incentive then for the person to not report their income, right? That essentially, if they get a raise, they don't tell them.
Right.
RAD is just in New York City, RAD is just starting.
Just starting.
Because it's out in Ocean Bay, it's out in, way out in the Rockaways, and we're going to see how it plays out. I don't know yet. I know that they're really, really interested in doing lots more of it.
As the mayor and oh, Greg, it's only one development. And looking at him and said, could you tell the truth for 1 second? Just 1 second.
It's not going to be one development.
I know it's not going to be one development. He said,
It could be a good thing. I mean, I don't know. I want to see how it goes first.
But I know, I look at the other cities. It wasn't good in other cities.
Well, like Atlanta?
Yeah, and New Orleans.
Yeah.
Maxine Waters wrote two letters to President Obama criticizing the program that he started. Now, that made me take notice, because if Maxine Waters writes a letter to President Obama,
not to Trump,
no,
but to Obama,
President
right.
Obama,
yeah.
with reservations, there's something wrong here.
Yeah, I see that.
So I look at that. So, Greg,
yes.
you've done a lot of reporting. I see a lot of other publications now getting involved, but you by far have done the encyclopedia on the New York City housing. Is there something else that you think is on the horizon, something else that we didn't mention that we should be looking out for?
Well, I am just not comfortable saying that we have a full understanding of the lead paint issue. I think that this is an issue that is we're just beginning to understand, and that it's much, much bigger than the way it's been portrayed. The city has consistently said, and you just referenced the mayor saying how no children were harmed. They're underplaying whatever happened. The U.S. Attorney's report specifically states that there are many hundreds of children who registered lead poisoning above levels that the federal government does not consider to be acceptable in New York City Housing Authority apartments over the last several years. I don't have the actual numbers. I don't have the number of apartments. I don't know what the time period is. But there's more there than has come out to date. And that's something that I hope will be explored, not just by me, but by the authorities and the city in particular. I mean, at the end of the day, they're choosing to say what they say, and they're doing it for their particular reasons. But at the end of the day, it's really important that it's about the kids. I mean, these kids, if that happened, and apparently it did, we need to know that.
Right. And the parents need to know.
Yes, they do.
Yeah. And that's all the time we have for Reaching Out. I'm Gregory Floyd, President, Local 237. A very special guest is Greg Smith, Daily News. Greg, please come back again anytime.
Happy to come back.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Reaching Out with Gregory Floyd, president of Teamsters Local 237. Join us each and every Saturday night at 7, right here on AM 970, The Answer.